Hello, Free Radio Burlington. This is Hillary, and I am here with Abed Fateh Abu Sror, and we are in Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem in the occupied territories of Palestine. So Abed, first, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the Al Rawad Cultural Training Center, which you are the director of, and tell us sort of what the training center is and what you do there.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Well, Al Rawad Cultural and Theater Training Center was established in 1998 in Aida Camp, which is, as Hillary said, the refugee camp to the north of Bethlehem, south of Jerusalem. It's like a border point now. And in Aida, there is no space for children, no playgrounds, no green spaces or whatsoever. So the children remain in the streets, and in the streets they have very few alternatives. Either play games with the Israeli soldiers and throw stones, and what happens is that we have people killed or imprisoned or handicapped for the remaining of their lives. So we started to think of an alternative to all of this violence and losses in humans, and offer the children the possibility to evacuate their energy in a peaceful and beautiful way. And that's when I thought about theater, creating a theater group, and where we can do the resistance, but the beautiful resistance in a peaceful means by theater. And with the new intifada in September 2000, we also started with painting. We have a lot of wall painting in the camp, which were very beautiful paintings. And it has nothing to do with the reality. In fact, what they expressed on the streets of the camp was lakes, green spaces, trees, deers, doves even. And also we have now a dance group. We made puppet shows and puppetry. We had a few computers, so we established a computer center for children and for people in the camp. And also we give language classes, English and French, depending on volunteers who come in. And in the emergencies, and the curfews and all the stuff, the center also transformed into a medical clinic, an emergency medical clinic, because there is no clinic in the camp. So in a way, we aimed the children in the beginning, and we find ourselves dealing with the whole population, because in a way, the camp lacks everything.
That sounds like an amazing, amazing project, and it's really nice. After Sarah and I have just come from seeing the wall in Qalqilya and talking to political prisoners, and it's just really great to hear, this idea that there's this kind of creative resistance kind of going on and starting with children. It's really wonderful. I was wondering if you could back up a couple steps and describe Aida Camp for people in Vermont, because when you say refugee camp, a lot of people think of tents, and I think Palestinian refugee camps are a kind of a foreign concept for a lot of people. So if you could tell us what Aida refugee camp is, and when it came to be, and maybe where most of the people who live here come from originally, and how many people are here.
Well, Aida Camp was established after the Israeli-Palestinian-Arab War in 1948. The United Nations, for the Palestinians, the UNRWA, printed lands in different regions and put all the refugees in them. So we have 19 refugee camps in the West Bank and 8 refugee camps in Gaza. And in the beginning, it was tents. Aida Camp was established in 1950, and the people were lodged in tents for about 2 years. And seeing the problem is not as temporary as it was supposed to be, UNRWA started to build shelters, which were rooms of 9 to 12 meters square per family. And if the family is larger than 6 members, then it was 2 rooms with the WC outside. And sometimes a small part of kitchen in with the ceiling in zinc. The roof was in zinc. And that continued until the 70s, after which the people started to build their own houses. And then we can find here now houses which are 2 or 3 floors high. Actually, we have like 4,000 people who originated from 35 different villages occupied in 48 and in 67. And since the population has increased largely from 600 in the beginning, 600 members, inhabitants, now we have around 4,000 people. We have 2 UNRWA schools, one for boys and one for girls, which serves the 2 refugee camps here, Aida and Al-Azza refugee camp, which is on the opposite side of the street. And as I said, there is no clinic and no space for children remained because of the massive construction, and people started to build vertically because there is no space horizontally to build in. And in all of that, we rented this small house, which is composed of 2 rooms, 16 meters square each room, where we have one room as a computer center and one room for rehearsals, theater, dance, and all this. It is a very small space when you have 20 or 30, sometimes 50 children rehearsing in the dance and the theater. But at least we have this small space for the moment. Hopefully we'll get larger space one day.
So some of you may have heard about the military incursion that happened today. And unfortunately, it was just outside of Abed's door where a lot of the fighting was happening. So I'm wondering if you could describe what you witnessed today and why the soldiers felt they had a right to be here, and what you saw.
Well, I think to begin with, the Israeli soldiers entered Aida camp, since it's like a border point, almost every day or every 2 days. They get in, the children start throwing the stones because they feel they have no right to come in here. And then there is shooting, there is tear gas all over the camp, and then they leave. Sometimes we have injured people, sometimes we have people who are killed. 3 days ago, after the suicide bombing in Tel Aviv, the guy who did that is a habitant of the camp. Yes, the Jerusalem suicide bombing. And he lives in the camp since about 10 years now, coming from another refugee camp, Al-Arub, in Hebron area. And so they came in and stalled curfew for 2 days in the camp. Then they demolished the house of the suicide bombers and left yesterday. And then today they came back and searching for a wanted person, as they say. So they arrived at 11 this morning, 11 a.m. And the house where they're searching is just a few steps from my house. So soldier pushed the external door of our house so that they have a clear image all around the area. And I just said to him, well, you don't have to push it by your feet. I can open it for you if you knock at it. So I opened the door, and of course my kid was playing in the this square just in front of the house, and he was terrified. And then we just were looking at the soldiers who were in the street controlling that it's curfew and nobody is moving outside his house. And the sniper was posted in front of our house as well. And we just watching the movement of jeeps and the military vehicles. There was a massive shooting all the time. It seemed like a battle, but I only could distinguish one kind of arms which was shooting. And at around 4, the house was demolished. And they announced that the Israeli military announced that there was 4 Israeli soldiers who were injured, and the guy they wanted was killed. So they demolished his house and they left. So the operation remained around 5 hours, where the area of the camp was under curfew, and it was a massive shooting. And as they say, this guy is wanted for now more than 1 year, but they never managed to catch him. Even they have made a lot of incursions in the camp, and now he is killed.
I'm just wondering, do you have any idea if there's any evidence at all, or is it just kind of like a military order that allows soldiers to come in? And this doesn't seem like justice from my perspective, and I'm just wondering if there is any kind of formal process that you may know of that the Israelis have to go to before they enter into the camp.
Well, I think the point is that every Palestinian land is a permitted land for them, and they can enter and leave as they wish. They may inform the Palestinian Authority a few minutes before they invade the region that they should evacuate the area and leave their buildings, and so they have no confrontation with Palestinian police or soldiers. If we refer to Oslo Agreement, I think there was this point that they have the right to enter when they are confronted with shooting and terrorists and stuff like that. But here we are in a situation where there was no shooting at Israeli soldiers. Every Palestinian is presumed as terrorist, and they can attack whenever they want. And they are talking about the Palestinian Authority as not capable of doing anything against terrorism, but they control everything, and they leave us with the Palestinian Authority that has no authority at all. How can I say to my child, well, we have some force, whatever, to protect us in case of such a situation? I mean, my child was terrified when he saw the soldiers, and after I calmed him down, he was looking at them. He said, he is an animal, he is a dog, he doesn't listen to his mother, because if he was listened to his mother and he was polite, he wouldn't push the door by his foot. And this is the reaction of a child who is 4 years old, not more, and this is what he sees from Israelis. He sees only soldiers in uniform who have large guns, sometimes larger than the person, the soldier himself, and he is facing that. How could he think in any way that these people want peace, or what is the meaning of peace would be for him? So I think what is happening is that Israel gives itself the right to do whatever it wants in the Palestinian land, and nobody says stop to it. Israel can arrest anybody. It can enter any place with the Palestinian silence Palestinian Authority silence because they can't do anything.
I just mentioned that we have just come from Qalqilia, which is a city that it's a city of 42,000 people that is now completely surrounded by the quote-unquote security fence, which is also referred to as the apartheid wall. Primarily the construction of the wall has been going on in the northern part of the West Bank, but it is due to come into Bethlehem. And I was wondering if you could sort of describe the path of the wall as it's proposed, as it stands now, and how you see it affecting your lives here in Bethlehem and in Ida Camp.
Well, I think if we're talking about the apartheid wall, which is now at the northern side of Bethlehem, suffocating the northern part of Bethlehem, the work has started in April 2002 during the siege of Nativity in Bethlehem and the invasion of Bethlehem area during almost more than one month, and the siege of President Arafat in Ramallah. And during all the media was focusing on these two points, the Israeli army was digging also the foundations for this separation wall at the northern side of Bethlehem. And what happens now is it's passing to the north of lands that belong to Palestinians, where there are Palestinians living in them, where there are fields, olives and other fields in that area, and they are preventing everyone to go to his field. What maybe you have seen in the north, that you have villages or towns which are completely encircled by the wall, and people are in a large prison where they have only one door to go out and get in as a prisoners from 1 hour till I don't know which time, from 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening or 5 in the evening. And it's what we live in, a large prison, and sometimes even this prison, which is presumed not to be a prison, is closed all the day and all the week. Children don't go to their schools, and it's okay, in silence. And what this wall is creating, it would create a mass of angry people who will just not be satisfied by talking that we are suffering from this. There would be a creation of more suicide bombers, because after all, what is happening is we have a disease that we have to get rid of. It's the occupation. And all what happens afterwards, suicide bombing or killing Israelis or whatever, it is all symptoms of this cancer that is not stopping. Bethlehem is suffering from this because this means that the area is sealed. It's the only point of respiration for Bethlehem. Tourism would be shut down. A lot of people would be prevented to go to their families. A lot of people would be just in free but in prison because they can't go outside their own village or their own camp or their own town. And this in no way can make security of anyone. Security is for everybody, and peace is for everybody. It's not the peace of the strong on the defense of the poor. It's not the right of ignoble blood over the whatsoever over the blood. We have the right to live as they are, have the right to live. We have the right to be treated as a humans, as they have the right to be treated as a humans. And no blood no blood's value is lower than any other blood value. The tears in the mother's eyes are the same, whether it's a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim. Nobody is more valuable than the other. The killing should stop, and it can't be stopped by constructing walls and closing people in larger prison or in smaller prison or whatsoever.
Finally, I just wanted to ask you one last question. And I'm wondering if you could comment on the Geneva Accords and sort of how they relate to everything that you've just talked about, and whether I'm wondering if you could sort of speak for the people of Ida camp in what Palestinians are looking for in a kind of resolution or perhaps not a resolution but a step forward to ending the occupation.
Well, to begin with, I think that Geneva agreement has forgot something, the wall. And they are talking about two states. I don't see in any way that there would be two states. And if we are speaking about, I don't know the word in English, Bantustan, then we are not speaking about any state at all. What the Palestinian side have agreed on, that annulling the right of return for refugees, is something they can't give up. And they do not have any right to give it up, because it is a United Nations resolution that was given to every refugee, every person. Even President Arafat himself can't give up. Any Palestinian could go to the court and say, I want to practice my right of return. And it has been practiced in Rwanda, in Bosnia, and many other places. So it's nobody's right to give up this right, whether he's Palestinian or Israeli or whatever. Saying that the right of return would damage Israel, it's a wrong thing, because these Palestinians agree to live under Israeli government who want to return to their villages. Saying that the demography, well, demography is always the poor has a larger natality percentage than the rich people. And even Jews during the Nazi massacres have a lot of population. They have a lot of natality percentage. Whenever the economic situation ameliorates, this percentage would diminish. And this is proven economically in every country of the world. Whenever the economic situation is better, the population would decrease in natality percentage. The other dangerous point is that the Palestinians recognize that it is a Jewish state. And this means that we have 20% of Israelis who are Arabs, Christians, and Muslims. That means Israel has the right to kick them out of the country since they are not Jews, and bringing the Jews to replace them. And these people, where are they going to go? To be new refugees in the supposed Palestinian state who has no army, no authority, no control on the borders, whatever control as is, and who has no continuity, geographical continuity. So what about the other refugees? Us, we will stay as refugees in this camp of refugees. We will not have any land to go to, so we remain refugees. And this is rented land. The refugee camps is a rented land. It's not a property. What about the other refugees who are outside the country, from Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and whatever? When they come back, where should they go? And your refugees as well? So what did we change in all of this? If this Palestinian state, or supposed Palestinian state, would be a state, we may think about something. But we are not talking about a state. we are talking about banter stance, and it's we are talking about an authority who has no authority at all. We are talking about appearances. We are not talking about this. I think the situation as it is now will in no way allow anything that supposed to be to have two states. Maybe we can think about one state that would be for everybody. If the Israelis will rule, then it's the democracy. They will rule. If Jews or Christians or Muslims will be together, they have lived together a lot of times in a lot of countries. But if the politics want to make a change, they can make a change, but they don't pull people in making initiatives that only prolongate the problem and calm the spirits. And if we will be happy to meet with Israelis outside the country and say, well, we realize peace, and if the Europeans or Americans or whoever, when they manage to unite Palestinians and Israelis, says, well, we made a step forward, I say it's hallucination. The problem is not Israelis and Palestinians meet, because we meet, we talk, we speak with each other. That's not the major problem. The major problem is that we can't speak here. They can't come to Bethlehem as civilians, and we can't go to them as civilians. So the problem, the change should be here, and not in Geneva or in Canada or in the States or in France or whatever. The basic change should be between the people inside the country and not outside the country. And the media should value the news and the deaths, whether they are Palestinians or Israelis. Because when the media speak about calm, they don't think that there are 10, 25, 2 Palestinians are killed. But it's the end of the calm. One Israeli even is killed, or when there is a suicide bombing, that's the end of the calm. Why? The Palestinian dead is as equal as an Israeli dead, at least in human basics, I think. And we are all human beings, and this should be considered the same. Media will not serve peace and justice in ignoring the other side of the story, the other side of the mirror. And Palestinian suffering is mostly built on that, this distinction, this two eyes measurement or two balanced system of creating the news. That is death, whether it's Palestinian or Jew or Hindu or whatever. And human life is a human life. And a creature life is a creature life. And if we speak even at least about environment, occupation is destroying our environment, destroying our ecosystem, destroying our trees, destroying our infrastructure.
Thank you, Abed, so much. It's been quite enlightening to speak to you. We have been speaking to Abed Fateh Abu Sroor, who is the director of Al Rad Theater Cultural Training Center here in Ida Camp in Bethlehem. And this is Hillary Martin for Free Radio Burlington. Thank you all for listening.